Welcome to the Open House Podcast. Conversations exploring life, faith and hope with Stephen O'Doherty.
Well, what an ugly week it's been in our federal parliament, especially in the Senate, with one senator, and I'll use this word, a word that I don't like using, I never use it in my own private life, but it's been used a lot in our media this week, so here it is. One senator being accused of slut-shaming another senator. The issue being, of all things, the most serious issue that we could possibly deal with, that is the murder of a young woman in Melbourne who was brutally sexually assaulted and murdered. And maybe, just maybe, there's a culture amongst men that turns a blind eye to the sort of language and violence that may lead to that down the track. That's certainly what the Prime Minister was saying when he condemned Senator David Leyenhelm from the Liberal Democratic Party for the comments that he made about Sarah Hanson-Young, another senator, and his refusal to apologise for them. And I think the Prime Minister was absolutely on the money. The comments made by David Leyenhelm, he said, were in response to something he heard, something Senator Hanson-Young didn't say. He said he heard her say, "All men are rapists." And his response was to ask her to stop having sexual relationships with men. He used different language, and I'm not going to repeat that here. She took that as a reference that she had loose morals, this term slut-shaming she has accused him of. She's asked him to apologise. He says, "No, I won't." And so it goes on and on. The issue in the end of all of that is, hang on a minute. How can we have respectful relationships? What do we say to our young kids, our boys and our girls, about living respectfully together as men and women? What do we say to them about cultures of violent language and then violence in action? What do we say to them about a culture that fails to connect those two events and where one of our nation's leaders, a senator in this case, refuses to issue an apology, potentially, probably for his own reasons of publicity and elections coming up? Well, I wanted to talk about that with a friend of mine, a good friend of mine, with whom we've discussed these issues before. I sit on a board with Susan Son. Susan is a blogger. She's an author. Her book has recently been sent to a publisher. And as I say, she's a director of Christian Media and the Arts Australia. We sit on that board together. Susan, welcome to Open House.
Thank you, Stephen. Happy to be here.
These comments are appalling, and what's happened next is even more appalling. It just looks like ongoing bullying to me.
He should have apologized. Well, first of all, he should never have said it. That's first and foremost. But he should have, on the heels of that, he should have issued an apology immediately. I don't understand how he hasn't.
Is it a problem that there is a group of people who don't actually understand the issue?
Yeah, I think it is a problem because we sit in conversations, whether we're in the workplace, in the boardroom, kids at school, and we hear these conversations and these sideways comments that I call them. And they're inappropriate on every level, whether it's race, whether it's to do with gender. But what he said falls directly in line with rape culture. He slut-shamed her, and what he did, those behaviors are commonly associated with the rape culture, which include victim-blaming, slut-shaming, sexual objectification, trivializing rape, and I think it is absolutely appalling.
Now, when you say rape culture, do you mean a culture amongst some people or particular people that excuses sexual assault? Is that what you actually mean?
Rape culture is a concept for setting rape as, I guess, a pervasive and it's a normalized social way. We see it in music, we see it in movies, we see it, we kind of see it across the board right now. I think it's refusing to acknowledge the harm caused by some forms of sexual violence. And so I think what needs to happen is instead, you know, when you see a news article and it says that a woman got raped.
And in fact, this is the very issue they were debating in the Senate at the time these words were used. The women should be carrying things to protect them. You might say, hang on a minute. Well, shouldn't men not attack women? Why are we assuming that women will be attacked?
Yeah, should not men be able to control themselves?
Mm-hmm.
is it all on the shoulders of the women to manage this whole situation? I don't think so. I think we need to be having this conversation with men. And you said something quite interesting the other night on The Drum, where you said, good, and correct me if I'm wrong, but you said good-willed men need to stand up and start having this conversation.
Yes, I did.
I think we need to start having this conversation with men, and strong, confident, beautiful men need to start standing up, and within their circles of influence, start having the conversation.
Yeah.
And when we hear things, when we're in conversation, when we hear the sideways comment, we need to be able to say, hang on a second, that's not right. That's not funny.
You're right. And, you know, just to give you a window on that world, when men comment on what a woman is wearing, or when men, and I mean when men in a group of other men comment on a woman's physical appearance, I mean, you've got to be the person in the group that says, hang on a minute, that's not appropriate. It's like not letting it go if you see somebody putting down their female partner, or worse, you know, being physically violent towards them or just abusive towards them. There's a whole advertising campaign, isn't there, aimed now at getting us to say, hang on, mate, that's not okay.
Yeah, that's right. You know, on another, on a different side of this, I am in a mixed marriage and I have seen racism through the eyes of my children. And it has devastated me. As a white woman, it has ripped my heart out. And I have found myself in situations recently where at corporate tables, in conversations, I have sat and said, you know what? That's not funny. Let's not go down this path of this humor. It isn't funny. And it takes a lot, because at times you sit there and you think, oh my gosh, I've got to say this. And you can feel your heart beating out of your chest, which is ridiculous.
Hmm.
But we have to start fronting up, and we have to start looking people in the eye and saying, I'm not going to be part of this conversation. I don't want anything to do with this. And it's wrong.
Hmm. Wow. Our guest is Susan Son. She's a blogger. She's a social media expert. And she's an author. Your book, in fact, having just been submitted to your publisher recently, I think, hasn't it, Susan?
It has. A big job, but it's in there.
Now, your kids are they range from 20 through 13. You have two girls and a boy.
Yes.
And as you say, they're of mixed race. Your husband is Asian. You're a Caucasian woman.
Mm-hmm.
What have you said to your kids? I'm interested in what you've said, particularly to your kids, about this sexist behavior, what you've called rape culture.
Mm-hmm. Look, we don't shy away from any conversation in our home. For the people who know me, they know that dinner time is a sacred time in our family, and we come together as a family and we eat together most nights of the week, and that's where conversation happens in our homes. We have very open, honest, and at times extremely robust conversations around these subjects.
Mm.
You know, as young as my 13-year-old is, she's very aware of what is going on and what's happening. And I guess for Philip and I, our hope is that we provide, especially both our girls and our son, with language and with tools in their tool belt to be able to face the world in front of them. So when it comes to whether it's race or whether it's sexual conversations, whatever the case may be, we want to have these conversations at home to help them with their language. Language is so important, as we see with what this parliamentarian has said. Language is so important, and to provide our kids with language that they can use in conversations, I think, is really important. And I think more families need to be having these conversations. They're not comfortable by any stretch of the imagination, but it is the world they are living in.
Your son is of mixed race, and therefore he doesn't belong to the white male culture as such. The white male Anglo culture that's predominant in this country. That's interesting, isn't it?
It's very interesting because, he sees it from both sides. He is in a minority group, yet he is a male. And so helping him find language and find his feet in this space and just talking to him about, you know, the simple, it sounds ridiculous to say simple things like respecting women. It should be a simple thing, but it's a big conversation because everything is pointing him towards not, whether it be the music he's listening to, some of the movies that are out there, whatever the case may be. On the flip side, you know, the thing we challenge our girls with as well is, you know, it's great to listen to, and I'm using music again as an example, but it's great to listen to your music, which tells you to drop it like it's hot on the dance floor, but then be a feminist on the in the same breath and stand up for who you are and what you believe in and the fact that you are a strong, confident woman. There are mixed messages everywhere. And so having these conversations, I think, again, I just say it is imperative that we're having these at home and being in this with our kids.
One of the things that I've been interested in over the last few days, watching the David Lanehelm thing play out, is to wonder about whether his attitude, the attitude that what he said was okay and that he doesn't have to apologize is also okay, wondering whether that's a generational thing. Now, you've got these kids, you're preparing for this world where they're getting all kinds of messages, but I'm quite sure that the message of it's okay to be a strong female is different for your kids' generation than it was for me growing up. So the question is this, do you think we are looking at a generational issue here?
Yeah, I think we are. Like, I was listening to something one of the reports he gave, and he very much said that if he needs to call someone, you know, I don't know what language I'm able to use on this show, Stephen. So if he needs to call someone a certain female dog name, he will call them that. If he needs to call someone, he says, I will make no apologies, I will call them that.
Yeah.
I do think there is a generational thing that is at play, which is quite sad. But in saying that, I think there's also... there's generational thing, and then there's just common decency as a human being that, you know, I have friends that are his age as well, men that are his age, that would never even consider speaking to a woman like that. Any woman, much less a young woman who is forging a path and, you know, making her way and building for the future. Any woman.
Yeah, and I think you're right. I would never even, you know, I grew up in the 60s, 70s. My parents were absolutely very particular that there are certain words you don't use about other people, and including gendered language around, so you're using, you know, the female dog reference to a woman. You would never use that. But isn't it interesting that we've got language about women that we don't have about men?
Mm-hmm.
To call a young man a pup entirely, in fact, completely the opposite than using a similar gendered version of that word against a female.
Well, you think about the wolf whistle. There's no wolf whistle for a man.
No.
There's nothing like that. And I think the challenging thing right now, and I know that this can be a bit controversial sometimes, but I understand white men are, it's challenging right now, and I'm not extremely sympathetic towards that, but they've never been put in a category. I am in a category, I am a woman. My children are in a category, and my daughter has said this to me, I am of mixed race and I am a woman, Mom. This is hard. And white men are now being put in a category, and they are being held to account. And I think that's a good thing. I think, especially when we see something like this situation, it's obviously a good thing.
The idea that white men have never been in a category is a really challenging idea, and I just want to pause and dwell on that for a moment. I mean, you can say, hang on a minute, that is a category, white men, but what you mean by that is that the category white male has never been held up as an object of ridicule in the way that other categories are.
I think it is difficult for them to understand people who are in categories. And if you allow me some space to go back and use my son as an example, he said something really interesting this past summer. We were in Canada on holiday, and he said something extremely interesting to my brother, who is a white male. And he said to him, you will never know what it feels like to be me. I deal with racism on a daily basis. And because you have walked into a restaurant or you have had this situation where perhaps you've gone into a Chinese restaurant and they've spoken Chinese and you haven't understand them and you've felt awkward, you will never, ever know what it feels like to be marginalized in this way. And I think I would look at him and say, I never knew. I am a white woman. I never, ever knew what that felt like until I've had the opportunity and the blessing to live through the eyes of my children. Now, I know I'm talking about racism now, but I'm using that as my lived example,
yes,
or my lived experience.
But
I don't think, I think it's hard to unpack, because if you don't have this unique opportunity to see it through the eyes of a loved one, or in this, in my own instance, I think it is a very difficult thing to understand what it feels like and what that lived experience is. So whether you're a woman who is being slut-shamed, or whether you are of a different race or gender, whatever the case may be, it's very difficult to ever know. Does that make sense?
Susan, it does. Our guest is Susan Son, a blogger and author, social media expert, and mother of young kids, 13 to 20. Susan, I think what cuts through is story, is narrative. So for men who might be feeling put out, we're the last of the last, you know, island out here being discriminated against. Well, no, we're not. Perhaps it would be instructive for you to, if you don't mind, share an insight on what it's like to be a woman working in or trying to break into that world. Now, here you are, a white woman, articulate, intelligent, capable, and indeed, you know, with a great deal of success in cutting through. People might look at you and say, oh, well, it's come easy to her. There's an example. There's someone who can do everything. But for those people who don't have that experience, particularly for white men who may not have thought about it, what's that been like? What is the cost of doing that for a woman?
The cost of doing it is great. I daily, like many women, run the risk of being seen as a bully, as someone who pushes her way through, someone who is that female dog experience, because you have something to say and you have something to add to the equation. And so you can be putting in categories based on that. And so, you know, Stephen, it's an interesting question, because over the course of the last year, I've had a few situations where I have almost thrown the towel in and gone and looked at my girls and went, you know what? Give up. It's never going to get easier. And then I think, we are in 2018. I don't have the luxury of giving up. And it saddens me that we're in this space. So the cost is great, because I feel like we're constantly pushing something. And I said to you recently, you and I have the opportunity to sit in some boardrooms together, and I said something to you recently, which was, you saw me. You actually saw me, and you listened, and you listened with intent. And I think for women to be seen and to be heard and to be valued, because we do bring a lot to the table, is a really, for men to be able to do that, it's a really powerful place for both of us to sit.
It's a tremendous privilege to be able to do that. And I think that partly prompted my remarks earlier this week on The Drum. You know, sometimes men might not think to ask. But when you ask, because you say, oh, that woman's just sitting there, she's so quiet. Well, why are women quiet in those environments? Well, because they feel, as I understand it, correct me if I'm wrong, you feel as though you can't break into something that's happening, some masculine, you know, the men are filling the room with words. And you just sit there, you've got something to say, but no one's asked you.
Well, no one's asked you, and even if you have to consider the weight that's on our shoulders when we are asked. If we fumble or if we stumble with the ball that's been thrown to us, we've just taken us back 10 steps.
Yes.
And we have to rise again and push and really push ourselves back into that place. We don't have the luxury of the stuff up. So when it is, and when the ball is passed to us in terms of whether it's adding to the conversation or running a project or doing something, we also understand the weight that's on our shoulder because there are so many other women behind us that are seeing us blazing trails. And we feel that responsibility because we want to do that for them. And so the responsibility is great.
Yes, and I learned recently that a perspective that I need to have is that women don't have the back history of years, generations of role models to call back on for leadership, female leadership. And it's almost as though you get one shot at it.
That's right.
Somebody said, what would it look like if a generation of women had been involved in the boardrooms of the world? What would that look like now for women stepping in now? I think it would be different now, wouldn't it?
I think it would be very different. And I think the challenge to the women right now who are in those positions, and I hold myself to this as well, is blazing trails is great, but we need to be creating structure. We need to be creating policy. We need to be creating stepping stones for other women to walk in. We can't just blaze the trail and leave a trail behind us. We actually have to put the stepping stones in place and begin that whole mentoring process so that we are creating something for them to walk into.
And just as an aside, that's why it's different from a an affirmative action policy based on quotas.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Because those women, you might have a quota, okay, we're going to elect 50% women, but those women haven't been prepared. You're almost setting them up to fail.
That's right. That's right. And that's why we need to be investing into mentoring programs for women, and we need to be supporting women in the workplace, and we need to, there's a whole list, a laundry list of things that we need to be doing, and we are. We are starting, and it's fantastic. But I look at my daughters, and just in the last 12 months, there have been times that I have thought, just throw in the towel, but I can't.
No,
For them, I can't.
No, you can't. Well, for a lot of people, you can't. But, Susan, be encouraged. I know you are part of a mentoring program that's running through the Christian Media and the Arts Australia, where you and I do share directorships, and the work that you've started with a couple of your colleagues, our colleagues, for women in media, Christian Media, has been fantastic. So, look, we're with you. We're all with you.
Thank you.
Thank you for what you do, Susan.
Pleasure. Thanks, Stephen. I really appreciate it.
Susan Son, and what wisdom, what wonderful wisdom there. You know, and for men to just sit and listen and hear, really hear what women are saying to us and allow them to help us to change our perspective. That's been the revelation for me over, I guess many years really, but that's the revelation for me that you got to change stuff. It's not enough even to understand, you then have to change stuff. But what you end up with when you open your mind to the reality of what women are saying about these issues is a far more equitable set of relationships, a far more open set of relationships, a far more real experience, a wonderful experience of life, sharing things across this gender divide, rather than just standing in the corner with the guys and ogling women and making comments. No, those days are well gone. Well gone. David Lanehelm, apologise. Just apologise.
Discover more Open House podcasts at openhousecommunity.com.au.